हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
श्री कृष्ण संहिता अध्याय 2 अधिकरण 3 कृष्ण सुप्रीमेसी असर्टेड बाय द स्पीकर्स एंड हियर्स ऑफ भागवतम बॉटम ऑफ 80 वृत्ति नेक्स्ट व्यासदेव्स रियलाइजेशन ऑफ of the Supreme Lord Krishna or the supremacy of Lord Krishna's Bhagavan or
yes, supremacy.
Okay. So Anucheta 57. Vyasadeva wrote concerning Krishna. And Vyasa saw Bhakti Yoga directed to Krishna, which effectively destroys Jiva's samsara. Learned Vyasa then wrote the Bhagavatam for ignorant people. By hearing Bhagavatam, bhakti for the Supreme Lord Krishna appears. Hearing it also destroys lamentation, illusion, and fear in the human being. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.7.6-7. In the above verse, Adhokshaja means Krishna, for it is said, an angry Rakshasi entering the cart was killed as Krishna slept beneath the cart's axle. Fierce Putana, with great strength and huge body, dressing herself auspiciously, gave her poisonous breast to Krishna. Seeing that she was killed, the coward said, she has been born again. Therefore he was called Adhokshaja, beneath the axle, Adhoksha, and born again, Ja. Harivamsa 2, 101, 30-32. This passage from Harivamsa concerning Krishna's name is well known. Thus all the latter verses in the Bhagavatam are about Krishna directly. The author of Sri Bhagavan Nama Kaumudi says, Krishna sabdasya tamala shyamala tvishi jashoda stanandhaye para brahmani rudhihi. Krishna indicates the Supreme Brahman, Parabrahman, with the complexion of a dark tamal tree, who drank milk from the breast of Jashoda. Because of the abundant usage of the name, from the beginning of that word, there is clear understanding of that meaning of the word. In Chandogya Upanishad is said, Krishnaya Devaki Nandanaya, to the son of Devaki, Krishna. In the verse under discussion, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.7.7, the goal of the work is clear. It is Krishna alone. By that one verse alone, Krishna's completeness is proved. Sutta spoke thus the verse. So we see that question before about the Krishna not being mentioned in the Veda. But the Veda, it means the Samhita, the Brahmanas, Aranyakas, and the Upanishads. So we see in many Upanishads, Krishna's name is mentioned. And so then, that has to be seen. Because if you're discussing the philosophy in that, naturally the Upanishads would be the main thing. Samhita just means what are the main verses. And then the Brahmanas, how those verses are used in rituals. Aranyakas, what's the, metaphysical understanding of those rituals and those words. And then the Upanishads will be what's the philosophical meaning of those words. So the Upanishad is also Veda. So if they say it's not in the Veda, it says, well, which part of the Veda are they looking at? So that's that. That's the thing. Because here Chandogya is saying, then we see that Gopal Tapani is mentioning, then Krishna Samhita, Krishna Upanishad.
Kalisantara.
Yeah, Kalisantara. Yeah. So then so many of these like that are mentioning. It's just that that'll be over there, because people who are just absorbed in karma, they don't really care. So you don't necessarily have to direct. But if they want to know the absolute truth, then now you start talking about Krishna. Riti, the next few verses describe the great sage Narada's attachment for Lord Krishna. Anucheda 58. Narada is described, by the mercy of the sages who were chanting about the attractive pastimes of Krishna daily, I heard about Krishna in that place with a Shakti attachment. Hearing constantly, I then developed a taste for Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.26. This is the same Krishna who sucked Jashoda's breast, mentioned Prakrit later, since the verses should harmonize a meeting. O Lord, hearing about Krishna full of all qualities, destroyer of suffering and attractive the senses, who, through his appearance, causes pleasure to the ears and great attraction to the mind, destroys all disinterest in other topics and all thirst for material enjoyment. Hearing about Krishna produces prema for the attractive Lord and friendship for the devotees. Please speak of the Lord's pastimes if you think I am qualified. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.7.1-2. Narada spoke thus to Vyas. Yeah, so that attraction, when the heart becomes purified through the chanting process and all that, then naturally one's prema for the Lord develops, and one's friendship for the devotees, because it's the same quality, that inherent quality of compassion, that when directed towards the Lord becomes love, and when it's directed towards the devotees it becomes friendship. So it's an inherent thing in the devotees, you know, whether people want to accept that or not.
So Maharaj, So one living entity always looks companionship with other living entities, in the more the friendship.
Yes.
And then as a service, then it's always directed primarily towards the Lord, and through that is directed towards other
living entities. Yes, means all other living entities are seen in their wonderful position because of their relationship with the Lord. So all living entities being part and parcel of the Lord, if you love Krishna, you love his parts and parcels. You know, so like that. So then that way then one has that friendship with all living entities. That's why then the Uttama, they just deal with everybody nice, you know, the same. But to preach, then they make a distinction. Then they distinguish between who are devotees, who are innocent, and who are inimical. Otherwise, the Uttamas just see there's the Lord and his living entities. Like that. So that's why also they, on that platform, can preach to people who normally wouldn't be preached to. You know, no one would be able to deal with them and things. So they're able to do that. So?
Yes.
Yeah. Anucheda 59. Narada repeats his conclusion in verses like Srimad Bhagavatam 1.6.27. O Brahmana, Vyas, concentrating only on Krishna, not attached to material enjoyment, and pure in mind, the time of receiving my spiritual body occurred simultaneously with that of giving up my material body. Like lightning flashing simultaneously with lightning. Elsewhere he says, you Pandavas are most fortunate in this world. Sages who purify the planets come and visit your house, because the Supreme Brahman personally resides in your houses in a human form. Krishna definitely expands as the Brahman, the realization of bliss without qualities, which is sought by great sages. He also resides in your house as the object of affection, a friend, a cousin, as your soul, as a person worthy of worship, as a servant, and as a guru. The truth about Krishna is not perceived as it as it actually is by Brahma or others by their intelligence. May the Lord of the devotees, who is worshipped by vows of silence, bhakti, and control of the mind, be pleased with us. Srimad Bhagavatam 7.10, 48-50. Sridhar Swami's commentary says, when Yudhishthira lamented that Prahlad was fortunate, since the Lord revealed himself to him, whereas the Pandavas were misfortunate, Narada replied with the above verses. Manushya Lingam means a form with hands and feet that appears human. It cannot actually be perfectly described, since it is impossible to describe the nature of a substance as Parabrahman, even with that form. Thus it is said in the Vishnu Sahasranama that the Lord is Anyudesya Vapahu. He has a body which cannot be described. This verse appeared again at the end of the seventh canto, Srimad Bhagavatam 7.15, 15-17, since they are most pleasurable. Narada spoke thus to Yudhishthira. Anucheta 60. Narada's attachment to Krishna is clear. Playing murchanas and alapas on the veena given by the Lord, using the seven sacred notes of the scale, I wander about singing the glories of the Lord. When I sing his glories, the Lord, Krishna, who makes any place that he touches holy, and who is attracted to those who sing his glories, quickly appears in my heart, as if being called. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.6, 32-33. The veena is given by Krishna, Deva. The Linga Puran describes how Krishna gave him the veena. The meaning is that in his heart he saw that form of Krishna who had given him the veena. It is stated that Narada sought out Krishna since he always remembered that person who had made the gift. Narada spoke thus to Vyas. Anucheda 61. You possess useful knowledge. Please understand spontaneously that you were born as a portion of the Supreme Person, Paramatma, for the benefit of the world. Wouldn't that Supreme Person be capital? Or because they're using it as just a definition of Paramatma. Therefore, please describe the pastimes of the all-powerful Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.21. How you who possess perfect knowledge, understand by yourself that you are an amsa of the Supreme Lord. Understand also the Lord who, though unborn, ajam, has appeared prajatam as Krishna. Understanding both these facts, the pastimes, abhyudhayaha of Krishna, who shows greater powers than all the avatars and their sources, should be described. Abhigan yatam. Though you are also the Lord, do not show maya, your form of ignorance. Narada spoke thus to Vyasa. Anucheta 62. Narada taught Vyasa the Krishna mantra, composed of chaturvyuha forms, so that he can manifest the Purana. He also teaches that the devotees are the greatest. I offer respects to you, Bhagavan Krishna. Let us respect Vasudeva, Prajumna, Aniruddha, and Sankarsana, Balaram, in our minds. Using this mantra indicating the four forms, one worships the deity who is the subject of dhyana mantra, subject of the dhyana mantra, the Lord worthy of worship. That worshipper is worthy of being seen. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.37-38. The meaning is clear. Narada spoke thus to Vyas. Vriti. Next, Lord Brahma asserts the supremacy and unique character of Lord Krishna's pastimes. Anucheta 63. Brahma speaks of Krishna. Bhume suretara varuta vimar ditaya klesha vyayaya kalaya sita krishna keshaha jata karishyati jananu palakshya margaha. Karmani chatma manimo Tani Bandhani. Krishna, with skillfully bound up hair, whose method of attainment is unknown to men, having made his appearance to relieve the earth of the suffering caused by the armies of demons, and to relieve the devotees of the pain of separation, will perform activities whose sweetness will hide its powers. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.7.26. To remove the suffering of earth afflicted by demon armies, or demoniac armies, maybe, or armies of demons, one or the other. The Lord, whose method of attainment cannot be understood by us, since he is superior to Paramatma, will appear, Jataha, and will perform activities, Karishyati Karmani. Who is he? He comes with bound black hair, and with his amsha, Kalaya. Because his amsha is mentioned, it means that the Lord is Swayam Bhagavan. In other scriptures, it is well known that two persons with bound black hair were seen by the devatas. Balaram is also indicated, since Krishna does not appear without him. Okay, then this is a doubt. Okay, why would Bhagavan, who is superior to the Purushas, appear personally just to remove the burden of the earth? End quote. He will perform activities whose abundant sweetness, superior to his powers, will be discussed profusely, Upani Bandhanani, by the devotees. Though removing the earth's burden can be easily done by his amsha, or a shadow of his desire, he will appear and manifest his pastimes for showering his sweetness, giving joy to devotees who maintain their lives by his lotus feet. That is made clear when his pastimes are described in the verse after that, 2.7.27. It is also made clear in the following. Yes, so a shadow of his desire, that would mean even the external energy can get rid of him. You appear in this world in this way, in your spiritual form, with a desire to relieve the burden of the earth and to give continuous happiness to your dedicated devotees by letting them worship you. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.7.25. This is explained by Sridhar Swami. Does not relieving the burden of the earth take place by my desire alone? Krishna asks the question. You come to give happiness to your devotees. In Srimad Bhagavatam 10.9.48, it is said that though he can relieve the earth of its burden by his desire alone, while playing he destroys Adharma with his arms. From the verse Srimad Bhagavatam 2.7.26, it is clear that Brahma was absorbed in describing the astonishing nature of only Krishna. Thus he says, my greatest possible good fortune would be to take any birth whatsoever in this forest of Gokula, and have my head bathed by the dust falling from the lotus feet of any of its residents. Their entire life and soul is the Lord, Mukunda, the dust of whose feet is sought even today by the Upanishads. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.34. Brahma spoke thus the verse to Narada. Priti. In the next few anuchetas, the author presents the realizations of the sages headed by Shaunaka. Brahma highlights Lord Krishna, Govinda, as the avatari, and the stages describe the Lord's name and his devotees as the topmost purifying aspect within the creation. Anucheda 64. What more can be said about the speaker of Chatushloki, Bhagavan? Krishna speaks the Chatushloki for the following verse describing the transmission of the verses refers to Krishna. Brahma saw the Lord of the devotees, the Lord of Lakshmi, the Lord of sacrifice, and the Lord of the universe, served by his chief followers such as Sunanda, Nanda, Prabala, and Arjuna. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.15. Akilanam Satvatam Patim means the Lord of all the Yadu warriors. He is the protector of prosperity, sacrifice, the citizens, the intelligent, the planets, and the earth. He is the protector and goal to be attained for the Andakas, Rishnis, and Yadus. May the Lord, master of the devotees, be pleased with me. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.4.20. This verse specifically mentioned the Yadus as Satvatas, confirming the meaning of the previous verse with verse like Shriya Patihi and Yajna Patihi. Previously, at the beginning of creation, I spoke to Brahma, sitting on his lotus, I guess in the lake of my navel, the highest knowledge. Maybe a comma after navel. Which reveals his pastimes, and which the devotees call as the four essential verses of Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam 3.4.13. In this verse, Krishna speaks to Uddhava about Brahma, about giving Brahma the Chaturshloki. Krishna created Brahma and preserved knowledge of the 18-syllable mantra for him. Those who have given up everything for Krishna surrender to him, the revealer of all knowledge and endowed with all pastimes. Gopal Tapani Upanishad 1.22. The Shruti shows that Krishna taught Brahma. Brahma then explained, when I pass the first half of my day in meditating and praising, after the end of the Prarardha, the Supreme Lord awoke to my presence. He appeared before me wearing the dress of a cowherd. Gopal Tapani 1.26. According to this, in some kalpas, Krishna shows his cowherd form to Brahma at the time of the beginning of creation, and thus his abode is known as Mahavaikuntha.
So Maharaj, It says, at the end of first half of my day, So basically, exactly the time when Lord Krishna himself manifests, on that time that he gives his darshan as Krishna.
Yeah. I mean, it's also that's the avijit, the middle of the day. This is considered very auspicious. But point is, he spent half a day doing meditation, and then only Krishna recognized his position. At that time, Brahma, after appearing, inspired by the energy of the Lord, developed the desire to create the worlds under the influence of his previous impressions. But he saw only darkness and nothing else in all directions. A divine voice then spoke to him directly and gave him the dear mantra, composed of the Kama Bija, the words Krishnaya Govinda, Gopijana Vallabhaya, and the syllable dear to fire, Swaha. Quote, you are an expert in meditation. You should meditate using this mantra. You will attain your desires. Brahma underwent meditation for a long time and pleased the highest form of God, the indestructible Govinda, Krishna, Brahma Samhita 5.23.25. It should be understood that the words Sunanda, Prabalar Hana Divihi, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.14, indicate that Prabala and other associates of Vishnu, along with Sunanda, Nanda, and others, appeared when Krishna appeared in Dwarka. It is said, Sunanda, Nanda, Shirshanya, Ye Chanye, Sabatar Shabaha. How are the best of the Satvatas, headed by Nanda and Sunanda, protected by the arms of Krishna and Balaram? Srimad Bhagavatam 1.14.32. Though there are many avatars and sources of avatars, Purushas, at the beginning of the Purana, the sages headed by Shonaka indicate Krishna as supreme. What is most beneficial for mankind? What is the essence of scripture? And what is the most pleasing to the Atma? Which we asked about previously in general is, for us, the description of the pastimes of Krishna. This is expressed in the following. O Suta, blessings to you. You know for what purpose the Lord, master of the Yadus, appeared in Devaki, the wife of Vasudeva. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.12. They give blessings because of eagerness that arose simultaneously with questions about Krishna's pastimes. Bhagavan, Lord of the Yadus, is the avatari, source of all the avatars. Anucheda 65. O Sutta, you should describe that Lord to us, who are eager to hear. The Lord made his appearance for protection and material prosperity. Describing Krishna's powers, they reveal their enthusiasm to hear about his qualities. Anucheda 66. His name, which causes fear for the personified. Immediately liberates helpless persons afflicted by the terrors of material existence. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.14. The name of Krishna, Yannama, immediately frees persons from samsara, tata. Since he is the avatari, and all avatars find their conclusion in him. The great effects of his name, even more than Krishna personally, are described in Vishnu Purana in another way. There in prose, it says that his names are the cause of all the names of the Lord. The name frees one from samsara because fear itself fears the name. Anucheda 67. Well, this is interesting. These ones just, he doesn't give an ending to it. The other ones he said, Sutta spoke best to theirs. So these are just read after another. Anucheda 67. His devotees, having taken shelter of his lotus feet and having fixed their mind in the Lord, immediately purified others of all sins just by the thinking of their devotees. Whereas the waters of the Ganges purify only by contact and direct service.
One of his verses are like, He will say that once all the verses finish.
Oh, then he'll... Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.15. Those who have taken shelter of Krishna's feet, whose intelligence is fixed on Krishna, prasamayana, purify others. Samo Man nishtata budhe. Sama means having the intelligence fixed on me. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.19.36. This is authoritative since it is spoken by the Lord himself. Prashama means strong fixation since it is related to Krishna, the full form of Bhagavan. Prashama Yana means those who shelter or path is strongly fixing their intelligence on Krishna. The sages are those whose minds are attracted to the rasa of Krishna's pastimes, such as Sukadeva. Being served just by being close to them, proximity, they purify those persons immediately of sins and desires. But the water of the Ganga, though emanating from the feet of Vamana directly and is another form of the spiritual and pure Lord, purifies only by repeated direct use, not just by proximity. Even by direct service, the water does not purify immediately. The purification is superior because of the superiority of the devotees to the water. Therefore, the devotees are more glorious than the Ganga water. Tirtham chakre nariponam Yad ajani yadushu sva sharit pada saucham. When the Lord descended among the Yadus, his glories eclipsed the Ganges as a holy place. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.9.47. Sridhar Swami's commentary says, previously Ganga was the supreme Tirtha. Now, when Krishna's glories have appeared among the Yadus as a Tirtha, they have made the Ganga less unam, into a place to wash the feet. Riti. because, I mean, they wash his feet, but then that's the point, is that it washes Krishna's feet, but he, the person who performs the pastimes, is so much more wonderful, attractive, and the purity. Because just by remembering the Lord and his interaction with the devotees, and remembering the devotees who are attached to the Lord, one gets purified. The Ganga, you have to go in the Ganga. You have to actually render service to the Ganga, or offer prayers, or offer, you know, something like that. Then, gradually, the process. Vritti, yeah. Having illuminated the glories of the Lord's name and his devotees, the sages headed by Shonaka now express their desire to hear his glorious pastimes in various avatars. They specifically hanker to hear those pastimes performed by his human-like form, thus substantiating the special nature of Krishna's Leela. Did you want Leela underlined?
No.
Okay. Anucheda 68. The tenth canto. Would be the tenth canto's verses purport. No? Is explained in the beginning. What person, desiring satisfaction of his intelligence, will not hear the glories of the Lord, whose actions are praised by reputed persons? 1.1.16. The meaning is clear. Anucheda 69. Because of the above glories of Krishna, they concluded. Please tell us, full of faith, about the activities of the Lord who brings the forms of all avatars by his will, activities, okay, bestowing the highest bliss to his devotees, which are glorified by the sages. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.17. Please speak about the activities, such as his birth, which give the highest bliss, Udharani. He has appeared bringing Dadhataha, his various amshas, kala, such as the Purusha avatars, effortlessly, Leelaya, since he is by nature complete. Anucheda 70. O intelligent sage, narrate the non-material stories of avatars, the Supreme Lord, O avatars of the Supreme Lord, Krishna, who performs his eternal pastimes independently by his yogamaya potency. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.18. Speak about the main avatars as Krishna as an accompanying narration after describing Krishna. Harehi means of Krishna due to the context. Avatars refer to Purusha avatars, Guna avatars, and Leela avatars. Speak of their pastimes, Kataha, such as creation and removing the burden of the earth. Anucheda 71. The sages reveal that they can never be satisfied since they desire to hear repeatedly Krishna's pastimes out of enthusiasm. We are not fully satisfied with the exploits of the Lord whose fame is the highest, because at every moment those exploits become more relishable for the hearers who have knowledge of rasa. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.19. We are satisfied with yoga and sacrifices, but not with hearing about Krishna's pastimes. We are not satisfied with the exploits of he who's, maybe a capital H?
Yes.
For he who is most praised, Uttama Shloka, since those pastimes make Ganga insignificant, as described previously. It is never sufficient hearing about him. Why? For the hearers, those pastimes become increasingly attractive. Or the verse can express, let others be satisfied, but we are not, because of the word to, but. Anucheda 72. The Supreme Lord Keshava, whose intentions remain concealed because he is deceptive to mankind, performed non-human pastimes at Balaram, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.20. Deceptive. What are these? What was the word they were using before? They were using something before where he just can't be understood. That was with Narada. So what about the one with about his hair? Isn't it? Krishna with skillfully bound up hair, whose method of attainment is unknown to men. Yeah, that's the whole point. His intentions remain concealed because... Commentary of Sridhar Swami says, the verse expresses the desire to have Krishna's pastimes recited. The pastimes, such as lifting Govardhana, are beyond human ability. Amartyani. It just means it's beyond ability. How does he become human and then perform non-human pastimes? He is a deceptive human. Kapata manushaha. The word manusha, human, means having a material body. Therefore, Krishna's body is deceptively kapata, human. He has a remarkable human form, since he performs human-like pastimes using a human form, while the normal human form cannot be Parabrahma. He does not refuse that form, since it does not impede his powers. That he is not a material being is confirmed in the story of stealing the Shamantaka gem. Unaware of his true position and thinking him an ordinary man, Jambavan angrily began fighting with the Supreme Lord, his master. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:56-22. This is also understood by Amritam Maya Manushyasya Varasva Vidhan. Please reveal the confidential pastimes of the Lord, appearing in human form by his mercy. Since he is a false human, his real nature as Bhagavan is hidden. Gudaha. Shonaka spoke thus the verse. Maybe instead of he's a false human, since he is not actually human. Or something like that. Next sutta expresses that hearing and speaking about Krishna's lila is the topmost auspicious activity. Or since he appears as human, maybe like that. Anucheda 73. Sutta being satisfied. Srimad Bhagavatam 1:21. After offering respects, Srimad Bhagavatam 1:22 begins the Purana by saying, O sages, you have asked good questions about what is beneficial for the world, because you have asked questions all about Krishna, by which the intellect is immediately satisfied. Srimad Bhagavatam 1:25. Commentary of Sridhar Swami says, since it was said their words are worshipable, Sutta worships their statements in this verse. O sages, you have inquired from me very well, since this is auspicious for the worlds, because you have asked about Krishna. The question concerning extracting the essence of all scripture means talking about Krishna. In latter verses, the words Adhokshaja, Sattvatam, Pati, and Vasudeva indicate Krishna as the main subject. The sages asked about what was best, Shreya, for humans. The answer is that topics about Krishna are best for them, since they are auspicious for all people. Loka Mangalam. The cause is that they please the Atma. Yena Atma Supasidati. Sutta spoke thus the verse. Okay, so then the Sattvatas that it mentioned there, because in the beginning of that one verse it was said the those who were intelligent and all that, but then it also in the commentary it was mentioning about it included the Vrishnis and all that, so that means that also, because it keeps mentioning Nanda, does that mean Nanda Baba or that means other Nandas, because there are other, I think gatekeepers are one of us Nanda. You know, does it mean that residents of Vrindavan are also counted as the Sattvatas? Because they're all from the same family.
Yes, yes. I don't have idea.
Okay. Vriti. Thus, the current Adhikarana proves the supremacy of Krishna by showing the unity in opinion among the hearers and speakers of Bhagavatam. The author first pointed out the enthusiasm of Vidura and Maitreya in discussing the topics of Krishna, and showed the great attachment of both the chief speaker and the hearer of Bhagavatam, Sukadeva and Parikit, to Krishna, thus emphasizing the supremacy of Lord Krishna's lila. Next, the realizations of Narad Muni and Vyas are presented. where it is clearly established that Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. Then the author quotes from the Upanishads the prayers of Brahma, where it is shown that Krishna is the original Purusha or the Avatari. Finally, the desire of the sages headed by Shaunaka to hear the pastimes about Krishna is presented, wherein the sages highlight the glories of the name and pastimes of the human-like form of Krishna. Yeah, here, like human-like form. Because otherwise, sometimes they use, you know, they translate the word, but they're using the wrong synonyms. You know, they'll say, but that's what the dictionary says, but the dictionary gives so many variety of options, you have to know the context. Thus, the nature of Krishna, Swayam Bhagavan, is reinstated by the statements of the speakers and hearers of Bhagavatam. In the next Adhikarana, the author shows the supremacy of Krishna through the six qualities of scripture. Oh, okay. Down the one starting from etymology and all those things. I mean, ending with that one. Those six.
Yes.
Yes, okay. Adhikarana 4. Bhagavatam stresses Krishna's supremacy through the six qualities of scriptures. Anucheda 74 to 81. Adhikarana Prakashika. The current Adhikarana reiterates Krishna's supremacy, which is conclusively proven in the previous three Adhikaranas of the Adhyaya. Bhagavatam, which is the essence of all the Vedic scriptures, stresses Krishna's supremacy all throughout, as it is enunciated through the six qualities of scripture, Shruti, Linga, Vyakya, Prakarana, Sthana, and Shankya, which act as proof. The author first establishes on the six aspects which elucidate the meaning of scriptural statements. Then he substantiates how all these six principles establish Lord Krishna's supremacy over all other avatars in various sections of Bhagavatam. After asserting that Krishna is described as the primeval form of the Absolute, the author provides further quotations to prove his greatness and completeness. Finally, the author clarifies the position of Krishna as the principal form and the vyuha forms are his avataras. Thus, this Adhikarana further affirms the Paribhasha Sutra, Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. Right, so he's just taking different angles, just in case, you know, you're not somebody, you've proven by one angle, but someone's not quite satisfied, then you show another angle and another angle until at some point it becomes obvious that, you know, they're not going to, how you say, be able to present some other approach. Anucheda 74.
Also, Maharaj, before it was said that and proven, like, he brought out all the important statements which are like Pratigya Vakyas after establishing Paribhasha Sutra. Now, this establishes why those are important, why the other statement which we quote contrary to this main statement are not important. It's because this is the quality of the scripture.
Okay. Because it has the levels of importance,
yes,
and the strength. So when it says strength and weakness, it means according to this.
Yes.
Okay. So Shruti will be strongest, Shankya will be weakest. Yes. Oh, so if two people give two quotes, then whoever's using the stronger of the Shastra evidences then would be better.
Yeah, that's why grammarian is considered the lowest, because without knowing the context anything, and then you just go into the dhatus and grammar, it like you'll be considered crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It's just trying to present what you learned rather than like a new learned child, whenever he learns two new words, he wants to use it everywhere. Like,
yeah, in everything. Yeah.
In everything. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Grammar will have the lowest.
Okay, so that's why it's the grammarians and the scholarship, where they just focus on those things. Okay.
Unless you have full knowledge of the scripture itself and other things, then how would you comment and then say this word instead of the other word?
That's why it says, and those who are honest and they accept it, even if it doesn't necessarily have all the grammatical rules being followed, but the point being made is the substance.
Also, Shruti means sometimes a direct meaning, But basically it's the independent statement, which is a direct meaning with the main meaning.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's also called literal meaning.
Mm-hmm.
But people, literal meaning means they think it's a grammatical meaning.
Yeah, and they take it literal to mean how their dictionary would deal with the word, means by the common usage. Yes, so that's right, this thing, because somehow or another, if you pull out literal, suddenly everybody, it's supposed to be one of those mahavakyas that by saying it, everyone stands back and leaves you alone, when it's actually, but literal according to who? You know?
Literal actually means direct meaning.
Yeah, the direct meaning. So the direct meaning is Krishna. Krishna is through Bhagavan Swayam. But they try to take it that, no, by the grammar, the dhatu, it should be, you know, this way. That's literal. But that's a misapplication of the term. That's really nice. So otherwise, then again, there, that literal, because like you said, it's grammatical, or, you know, according to the, what words are there and all that, it should be translated like that. Because we had one devotee back in the 70s, he had learned a little bit of Sanskrit and, you know, stuff like that. So it's like, you know, what's that, utsamayi, you know, that you learn a little bit and then you think, ooh, I'm such a big pandit. So he went through the Gita, and I'm not sure if how it was his connection or something, but he was involved kind of in those early days. I'm not sure if he was involved with BBT or what, but he went through the Gita, and the word for words and all that, he retranslated them to be, you know, literal. And he thought that, you know, yes. He didn't last in the movement long after that. You know? But he was actually, at the time, extremely prominent person. Extremely prominent. But he got into that kind of thing, and then he was, you know, how you say now, he's a historical person, you read about him, you know. How you say?
Basically, he learned the first stage of little Siksha and little Vyakarana. But what about the later stages of Vyakarana, which is the Kavya?
Mm-hmm.
At least somebody learns after Kavya, and they appreciate
the Kavya, yeah. Because it's just that, you know, yeah, it just, they just, yes. Anucheda 74. In this way, the thesis has been proven by showing the unity of opinion among the hearers and speakers of Bhagavatam. The thesis is proved by the six qualities of scripture, Shruti, Linga, Vakya, Prakarna, Sthana, Shankya, which act as proof. Footnote 12. There are six standard rules of analysis of strength of scriptural statements according to Jaimini. Shruti, Linga, Vakya, Prakarna, Sthana, Samakyanam, Samavaye, Para, Durlabham, Artha, Vipar, Viprakarshat. When there is a combination of literal meaning, interpretive meaning, altering the syntax, referring to other texts, philosophical stance, and etymological meaning, the latter statements are considered progressively weaker in authority because of the possibility of the producing contrary meaning. Jaimini Sutra 3.3.14.
Mm-hmm. This means that syntax is also very important. What's syntax in this one?
Syntax.
Legal meaning is okay.
Maharaj, we were using the date cases, case sentences. Sometimes the acharyas say that because it is used in this syntax, then it doesn't refer to that Krishna wealth or.
Means by what case it's in.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay, because the case then.
You were explaining about date you and.
Oh, okay. So that's syntax.
Yes.
Okay, I've heard the word for the last so long, but
that's syntax. It usually means commas, commas, and all those stuff. Syntax and punctuation.
Yeah, but it has more deeper. The whole thing comes in.
It means you're using the punctuation to bring that out. Like that, especially in English, you have to do that. In Sanskrit, there's very minimal punctuation that is ever used. It's very rare you see
almost
commas.
Nothing.
Yeah, almost nothing. It's rare you'll see a comma. But they use them sometimes.
Very prominent. Russian is very prominent, especially in comparison to English. They're very keen on using those commas and everything.
Okay.
It's a main part, it's a big part of the language.
Yeah. So it's just because then in Sanskrit it puts more on the endings that show the case than like in English. It's partially what do you call that? There's a word for it, which means the words carry what their position is. Declination. You decline a word. Go, going. You know. Yeah, like that. Goes, like that. Because some of them, they're only partly done, and then the rest of it, the word changes or does other things, or you have to put other words. So somehow or another, English isn't very consistent in its declination. So they'll say it's a non-declined language, though it does use declination, like that. If it doesn't use it on the word, it will use it with a group of words or a word phrase that carries the meaning. Just other languages are a little bit more scientific. So within the word, you can do that. You don't have to add in all kinds of words to make it function. So it is, but it's just a matter of whether it's directly or indirectly. So much of the time it's indirectly declined. But, you know, the grammarians in their, how you say, their so-called wisdom will say, no, it's not declined. As if that's superior. That's like saying children's language is superior to adults because the children's language is not declined. No?
This is also difficult because the Vedic tradition is an audio tradition, but modern means visual.
Mm-hmm.
So even with all the technology and stuff, people write messages, and most everybody, what I experience, I don't know, maybe others, they have their own experience, they like messages more than voice messages. And
really?
Yeah,
I guess because they're very quick at typing. They can type quicker than they could push the button, speak, and this and that.
Yeah. But I personally like voice messages because when you send a voice message, you hear the emotion, you hear the intonation,
yeah.
It's the whole thing.
Yeah.
But here, it's just on the screen, you can interpret it as you wish.
Yeah, no.
But most everybody, those who like messages, they are really annoyed with voice messages. They are like,
because they have to push the thing and then listen to it, while the other one they can just glance at it and get the gist of it.
Also, main reason among the corporate people is that why they don't send voice messages is because
you can't listen to them in a meeting.
Another thing, those are their mind, mainly. You have to involve, as I said, it has its emotion, but they cannot use it. They cannot involve it so much.
Yeah, because in tactical, you're not considering emotion. Tactical, technical, it's not about emotion. It's just about management and getting things done. While in the operational and strategic, you actually have to deal with it. You have to think about the individual as a person and their emotions and feelings and all that. So since corporate basically only works on tactical and technical, because the point is means you say no, they have the whole range. No, the strategy is make money, make profit, and the operational is that you can either, you know, cows, land, trade, or banking. You know, that's how you're going to do, or however you combine it. So those two are already set. So then their focus will be on in application, just on the tactical and technical.
Actually, with writing a message, you can hide your
You can hide the feelings, but at the same time you have to make sure it gets across. See, the thing, I think originally the idea where it came from, the internet and the memos and all these things, they came from what I have heard from the Pentagon, where it's just supposed to be non-emotional things that are just facts. You know, the meeting starts on, you know, on Tuesday at 3 o'clock. That's what it was for. It was never meant for actually discussions and things that require human interaction. But it somehow or another became quickly, you know, going into that. And like you say, it's how you can basically, depending on what mood you're in, you can read into it whatever you like. So you have to be very, very careful. So it would be quicker to speak a message than to write one that would actually be able to be seen in its actual, what it means, without being misinterpreted.
Yeah.
Like that. Because otherwise you have to keep going and doing the words, but while you talk, means as you're talking, you're analyzing, because, you know, as it's coming from the nod, you know, it starts to come up through the things, you start to see which one would be useful. You know, I want to say this, so therefore the energy comes up, it turns into the verb, it turns what noun does that, and then you can choose while you're going before it comes out. But in speed, in the other one, you already have to think of the word and then write it, and then you have to think, well, that doesn't work.
Because previously you mentioned, you know, translation and different other things connected with grammar and logic. So when, for example, if we transcribe your lecture,
it's a disaster.
The if anybody who doesn't know you as a person, and like for years, not only like I've met Maharaj when he gave class in Moscow in 98, and that means I know him.
Yes.
Not that kind of knowing. It won't make any sense. Mm-hmm. And actually, people like to poke their noses and put, like you explained, that, you know, even in translation, some people translate just words.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of words, they're very exact. Mm-hmm. But if you try to connect the words, it doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. Then some translate sentences,
mm-hmm.
some paragraph, some chapters, mm-hmm. some even books. But even book, if we take, for example, Bhagavad Gita, it's in the context of Mahabharata.
Mm-hmm.
You have to know Mahabharata to understand Bhagavad Gita fully, although it is complete in itself,
mm-hmm.
but the greater picture. So what I'm trying to say is that when you write texts, and for example, the teachings of Srila Prabhupada,
mm-hmm.
we have to know the whole body of his books. Mm-hmm. That's the minimum.
Mm-hmm.
But also we have to understand what was his mood, what was his intent,
mm-hmm.
when he was, because in transcribing his class or his talks with his disciples, it's not obvious. Those who were there, they can explain you what it actually was.
Mm-hmm.
But just reading it, we get an idea. Mm-hmm. But it's very narrow.
Though you do see if Prabhupada's giving a lecture, you can transcribe that and basically just put in a few comments in that,
yeah.
and then it works. So many of the, I think, introductions and some other things, small, but are just lectures. But like you said, conversations, you have to see the person, the mood, what was there, what's their relation.
Yeah.
No, it's difficult. That's why it's just, you know, like you said, knowing the vocabulary and grammar is not enough. It doesn't jive.
Yes. Apparently here, he says referring to other texts.
Referring to other texts. Yeah, it means that you're like, just like you see in the purport, you're explaining the Gita purport, and then you bring in a verse from Bhagavatam or Chaitanya Charitamrita or Vishnu Purana, and then in Bhagavatam you bring in Gita and Chaitanya Charitamrita and the Puranas, and Chaitanya Charitamrita you bring in Bhagavatam. And so it's also what we generally refer to as the Sangati. Yes?
Jiva Goswami regularly uses that in this particular sentence, like Kapata Manasya, just now we read. Mm-hmm. This word, actually, the meaning of this is this particular, because it is used in another place in this particular way. That's why here also it will be the same meaning.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't know the meaning of a particular word, then you use another place where the same word is used, where the meaning is very clear, to establish its meaning in this place.
Mm. Yeah, that's nice.
That will be the fourth. After, you cannot make any sense from the first three. And syntax manaj is the study of how words and morphemes combine together to form larger units such as phrases and sentences.
Okay.
That the whole thing is
that combines
syntax. Syntax is not.
So it means that how they're put together to bring out the meaning.
Yeah.
So like you said, the commas are used, what word, what specific use, what order you put the words in. Like you can have a sentence, you can do it in one way, and it has all the points. But when you take the what's at the end of the sentence, put it in the beginning, then it becomes clear. Yeah, so much of the time would do like that. That's why you see when others do these translations that they take, it's just more direct. They just see the verse and translate it. You can't understand it because they don't use enough words in the and the punctuation to actually bring out the meaning. They're just translating. That's what I mean when we keep stopping and like this, because just says that he's deceptive. You know, what does that mean? It means that he himself, by his own internal potency, covers himself so that people who are not devotees can know him. So only through devotion can you know him. So that's what that deceptive is supposed to carry, but in that context, it doesn't. It just makes it sound like he's tricky. And, you know, so it's not enough. And we see then the acharya in the purport, and they say he deceives them because of they're not interested. And so therefore he deceives them into thinking that this is his, you know, the illusory energy is real, or that he's an ordinary person. Like that. But you have to carry. In other words, if it's very obvious that you know, and in the context it's already been explained, that you'll get that. If not, you see, Prabhupada will very much bring that out. And other parts that they're kind of secondary details, but if they're not going to add to the meaning, then they may even be left out of the sentence. But they're in the word to word, so you can see the whole idea. But then how that's put together, that's the important thing. Because the word for word will be the etymological, the Shankhya. But then how that's organized. So that's a lot of times is what would happen is that when they say literal, they're saying it's the word for word, and then the translation, they're thinking they don't match because they don't know what's being said. And so they think that, no, the literal meaning, the dictionary meaning is the most important. You know, as if Moni or Williams were like great sages or something. You know. So it becomes a big, they're using that lower end or the lowest end and then trying to establish things on that. And, oh, Prabhupada didn't, you know, like that. Oh, he was good, but not this. And it's like, you know, no, yes.
Also, if we think about it, in prose, this syntax it's more or less obvious because it's, you know, it's by the rules.
Mm-hmm.
But if we take poetry, it's all upside down.
Mm-hmm.
And then we look Srila Prabhupada's translation of Bhagavad Gita.
Mm-hmm.
He puts poetry into prose, and it makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go word by word, even if you look in his translation under the, I don't know how you call it, the word for word translation.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, just said word for word.
Word for word translation, you try it just doesn't match. But then Prabhupada takes poetry and then translates it into prose, and it makes perfect
sense. Yeah, so sense. Obvious.
And from both, like we mentioned previously, both, it's not his first language, neither Sanskrit nor English.
Mm-hmm.
So he is like, I mean, comments.
Yeah, the point is what they have to remember is, means, if you're coming from the spiritual world, what language do they speak? You know, so they know rasas, they know everything. So any nuance you would want to discuss, they know it. So They're just trying to make it accessible to us who are, how you say, a bit thick-headed. Yes.
Also, like, even 50 years before, everybody could speak at least 4 or 5 languages easily, because there is not so much deception involved in like modern times.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because people are straightforward, then the language used to express also can come out nicely.
Mm-hmm.
Now everybody needs to cover their emotions,
mm-hmm.
hide everything, and speak in a very diplomatic manner.
Yeah.
Then the language also tend to become more complex.
Until you can't speak. Even now, because I've seen one thing, is that some guy made a comment, you know, you see is that you have this, you're talking about groups, and they'll have what do you call it? Anachronism? Is that what you call it? Where you just like ISKCON, International Society of
Acronym. Oh, yeah.
Huh?
Acronym.
Acronym. Might be an anachronism, but whatever. An acronym means, and so the person's going on what is, you know, what they're speaking, and they're talking about this particular group, but in the time between when he's been kind of, or you know, been more in touch, or when he was last dealing with it, and when he spoke, which could have been weeks or months only, they've added more letters and more pluses and more this and more that, and so then they get all up in arms about he's leaving out this one and that one, and he doesn't care, and as if all he has to do is figure out, you know what I'm saying. So it's like you get to the point where you can't even talk, because everything you say is wrong. So the only thing that's common is if you're attacking someone else who's not supporting. That's the only thing you can be clear that you can speak. But it's all.
That's why media channels can speak 24 hours.
Yeah. But then you also do is you reduce the words and what can be used, and then you get back to, I remember it was something, I can't remember, maybe it was Planet of the Apes or something. And there was one of the actors was talking about how, you know, they don't have hardly any words, but through whatever they do use, they had to express the full range of emotions. You know, normally the script would have so many words and so many descriptives. They just threw the various sounds and grunts and this and that, then had to express everything and make it convincing. So he said it's much more difficult. So I guess maybe that's the direction they're elevating themselves down to. They're going back to what they call that Lucy speak.
Yeah. In Russian, also in the classical literature, there's one. Your character, one character, and she, her vocabulary, the whole vocabulary she's using is dirty two words, and she's like perfect.
Oh, okay.
Everybody understands because she's using short words with a lot of emotional input.
Okay.
And then, but I mean, it's comic character, but still.
Okay. Yeah. I guess that's right.
Still use. You know, when people speak very cool language, that's how
they're
called.
Yeah,
how your vocabulary is like hers.
Okay.
So two words, and she's quite high in the society.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
During the Gundicha Margin, all the Vaishnavas use one word vocabulary.
Yeah.
Hari, you know?
Oh, anything they wanted, they just said Hari. They want a broom, Hari. They want water, Hari.
That was,
and everybody understood.
Yeah.
That's the mystic.
That's what they told about him. Anything he would say, would just say Hari
Krishna. Oh, Krishnas Babaji.
Okay.
Disciple of Bhakti Siddhanta. Yeah. Yeah.
What's philosophical stance?
You know what it is? Because in here, it's here, in other places, then when translated as in another way? Do you know the other?
I think the meaning of everything will come in the...
Oh, is that the hermeneutics?
Yes, Maharaj, all those are explained in this text.
Oh, it's coming up. Okay, it'll all be explained. Means Jiva Goswami will explain.
Yeah.
Yes, so... Yeah, because you can say as well, according to the, you know, our hermeneutics, it means this, but no, it has to go back to Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam.
Yeah, he explains Thana, philosophical stand, refers to establishing a relation according to what's mentioned in the sequence of verses.
Okay.
So in that section, what is discussed, so that particular word carries that meaning. Yeah. Like for example, he says Bhagavan, then somebody says it refers to Krishna, because earlier they're describing Krishna's first tense, not Lord Vishnu's or Narayana's first tense.
Mm.
So here when it says Bhagavan, it should refer to Krishna, because this whole section, Krishna is what is the point of discussion, not Lord Vishnu.
Doesn't he
have
in Vedanta Sutra?
Yeah, yeah. We use all these six.
And then in the middle there is Brahman, and then they say Brahman is
yes,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah, they're missing everything else where it said yes, yes.
So these six are very prominently used in Vedanta Sutra to establish, you know, the stance of Bhagavan is the one who discussed like that.
Okay. Shruti is independent proof, literal meaning. It is shown in Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam.
Maharaj? In the footnote.
Oh, we didn't finish. Okay. The philosophers of the Mimamsa school developed this method for deciding which among various possible understandings of a scriptural statement is correct. And they originally applied these six criteria to the analysis of sacrificial rituals. Here the author shows how all these six criteria can be applied to Bhagavatam to prove the supremacy of Krishna. Because Krishna reveals to these different sages, and they create their schools like that. Because these schools are always there. So every time there's a creation, then these schools come up. So it's not that, it's always the same. Every universe you go, it'll be the same six philosophies. You know. So therefore then... the principle is there, though Jaimini is only applying it within context of his aspect of karma for understanding. Oh, so the ritual says this, and then someone will say, oh, that means we do it like this, and someone, no, we do it like that. And then, depending on which statement they're using, then you can say that it means this or that. But here, then, the Acharya is taking it and showing that, no, it can also be used in all levels, because it's originally from, in other words, what they're talking about is originally from Vedanta. But they're only taking that aspect of it. Just like logic is from Vedanta, but then if you only make that into your philosophy, you get, you know, Gotamas. You know, like that.
This verse is quoted like many, many times. I think mainly because this verse stands, of Jaimini Sutra, this Jaimini Sutra, because it shows how Shruti is the main, and all the other four schools he just defeats with this logic of using the six standards and all logic.
Yeah, because they're not using the but at the same time here is the literal, means the literal is used, but that's
direct.
It's not direct.
Shruti means direct meaning knowledge, which actually statement which is independent.
Oh, independent.
It stands on its own. It doesn't require any interpretation or
okay.
Anything like that.
So how does that go between the statements that are, what do you call it? The Abhidha Shakti and the Lakshana Shakti, the direct and then the poetic?
Abhidha, the main one, the Shabda.
Yeah.
That is, what is that? Lakshana,
yeah,
the direct meaning is called Mukhya. It's the Mukhya.
So it's the Mukhya, not the...
Lakshana will be the interpreted, the Linga. The next
one. That'll be the next one. Okay, so basically you have direct and indirect.
So when a direct meaning doesn't make sense, then only you use the Lakshana.
Linga. Yeah, because...
Like it's...
So could we just then put direct instead of literal?
Yes, ma'am.
In all these places?
Yes, ma'am.
That would be better. Because literal, that's already now how do you say it's literal? Now you can say, well, it's,
yeah, literal is already interpretive.
Yeah, it's already interpretive, and it drops it down to the bottom too, basically.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Okay. So Shruti is independent proof, direct meaning. Right? It has shown in Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. Lingam means statement, which agrees with and supports the Shruti statement. While Lord Brahma looked on, all the calves and boys tended them, immediately appeared to have complexions the color of bluish rain clouds, and to be dressed in yellow silken garments. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.13.26. Will there be more description? Or like, because in here you can also, that discussion where Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives that whole thing about the Abhida and the Linga, you know, or the Mukhi, and that you could use that when he's talking here, is that Linga which supports the Shruti, so that means that then you can describe about the direct and indirect or something.
Yes, sir. I didn't try from that angle. I was just trying to find out when all the six are mentioned properly.
Yeah.
Then I didn't find any confusing thing, then I just left.
Yeah, but it's good to put, because then you know you have the direct meaning and then the indirect meaning, but those is going to be solid. Then you start down in the other four, where then you have to use other you know, referring to something else and like that. But elsewhere, Shruti meaning is produced by strength of linga, as in a mantra like Bahir Deva Saranam. Kusha grass is the residence of the Devatas. Apastamba Shrauta Sutra, Krishna Yajurved 1.3.11. Did you notice the what was before Yajurved? You have Yajurved 1.3.11. Before Yajur, there's a word. In this case, the statement Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam is the perfect Shruti statement. So it's the most independent of all Shruti statements. The vakya means interpreting the syntax to bring about a unified meaning from many words. According to expectancy, akanksha, connection, yogyata, and proximity in time and space, asati, for instance, take the following two statements. By hearing Bhagavatam, bhakti for the Supreme Lord appears. By hearing Bhagavatam, bhakti for the Supreme Lord Krishna appears. Hearing it also destroys lamentation, illusion, and fear in the human being. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.7.7. In that mind, which was undisturbed because it was pure from the performance of bhakti, he saw Lord Krishna, complete with all his energies and spiritual expansions. And also saw Maya, who took shelter behind the Lord, Purnam Purusham, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.7.4. The Purnam Purusham in the second verse refers to Krishna. That is understood clearly by the statement of Srimad Bhagavatam 1.7.7, quoted first.
Maya?
He's talking about the
No, I don't understand how it refers to Bhakti. I understood the meaning.
They're comparing the two.
Comparing?
Isn't it?
Connection. There are three aspects according to expectancy, connection, and proximity. These are the three ways how you combine or get a unified meaning of words.
So that's so how syntax deals with these three.
Yeah.
Okay.
So here it uses the second one, the connection. Because it's the later text 177 uses, when he says refers Purana Purushan, then he says about the Lord Krishna, that means 174 also should mean that it's speaking about Krishna, not Lord Vishnu or anybody else.
Oh. Yeah. So before it says Purnam Purusham, then you could say Purusha could be any of the Vishnu, but he says Purnam Purusham, and then he says Supreme Lord Krishna. So that means then Lord Krishna means the Purnam Purusham.
So that connection, sometimes if the first verse says something, it's referring to Krishna, and then later it comes some other, okay, it's because it is said before, then later also means the same. But sometimes before verse may not say anything, but later verse may say that refer to exactly Krishna. Then that's why he's putting the 7-7 before and 7-4 after, yeah. So that.
You see sometimes the acharyas, when they quote verses, they'll reverse them.
Yeah, it's a reverse order.
Yeah, because the clarity is there. That's what's meant by it. Because you have, I think that was in Vedanta Sutra, there was a discussion. I don't remember the terminology. But you have a main point being made. Then after that, there'll be so many sub-points being made. So they may not give as much detail because they're talking about one aspect. Let's say the one verse is stated and it brings out so many points. Let's say like the six qualities.
Indra, these qualities of Indra is coming from the word that was about this also.
Okay.
Otherwise we would have understood that Indra is the supreme.
Yes. Yes, so like that, it'll be, you know, it's just like, let's say, you have the nine qualities of a Brahman, and then after that, you have so many shlokas that may describe, you know, one or a combination of those things. But those are in support of that main one. So because it's already been explained there, you interpret all those others, or understand all the others according to that main one. Or then you also have where there's giving a development of things. And you might be talking this and that, but then you come at the end. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur has done in his introduction to the Sikshamrita, he's talking about, he always refers to Lord, God, Supreme, but the very last paragraph he says, this is all Krishna. We just mentioned all this because in this way, that because one wasn't understanding, but now that one has come to this point, you can understand that this means Krishna. So then at the end he's making it clear. So it's just where the main verse, in other words, where the main verse comes, where the main verse carries the weight. If it's before, all the ones following are doing something. Just like you mentioned before, is that also Vedanta Sutra, where something's being said at the beginning of the chapter, then it gets into some fine details about he's the supreme, pervades everything and all that, and he has no material qualities and all that. But that's all based on explaining finer aspects or some details of those earlier things. Then at the end it'll come back to then so therefore one should surrender to that Lord who, but the Mayavadis would just take those middle ones that are impersonal. Like that. So they're not taking the main verses that are giving, you know, it's just like I say, okay, cook this preparation. Then if I explain afterwards, there's so many details. But it's about that preparation, because in those things that I'm going in, techniques and spices, you could cook other preparations. But you have to interpret them always or see them in the context of the original point to be made. So, the Purnam Purusham in the second verse refers to Krishna. This is understood clearly by the statement of Srimad Bhagavatam 177, quoted first, but following verse 4 in the text. I think it's also a grammatical point. I think it's in the Rita Vyakarana. That's where I'm remembering it very specifically. He uses different kinds of sutras also, and that it may be in line with this, but certain sutras, it's making the main point, and then there'll be ones that are exceptions to the point. They don't make the main rule, you know, go away. And there's other ones where there's variations on it, so the same rule can be applied, but in different situations, it slightly adjusts and all those things. So it's also, because grammar has to be logical, so it also has that. So those same principles will be there when you're discussing the philosophy.
Also, that means that when you make an exception to the main rule, actually that exception cannot stand on its own.
Yes, it's only
just
in context.
Like all these other ones cannot stand on their own. They have to be based on the Shruti. So when you say the main rule, that is kind of like Shruti, which is independent. But all others, when you are making, their relevance is in relation with this main rule. If it is not for the main rule, they don't have any relevance on their own. So that shows they are subordinate to the main rule also.
Yeah. That also then brings up the thing, and then the tattva sandarbha, because you're establishing, you know, the praman will be of the three. Shabda will be the main. And then Pratyaksha and Anuman have to be seen in the context of Shabda. Then, you know, establishing then that Shabda means the Veda, and of the Veda that means the Upanishads. Right? And that will give the thing. Then he goes on to show that how Puranas actually explain the Upanishads. And then of them, the Srimad Bhagavatam is that supreme. So you have the one is from there, they read onto Sutra, you know, like that, from that Nyaya aspect, and then the other one from the histories, and you expand. Then Bhagavatam is the perfection of the Puranas, and it gives a kind of natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. So then Bhagavatam becomes Shruti. Of Shruti, it becomes the highest Shruti. And then of that, then the Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. So then that verse can be used to regulate any verse in any Vedic literature.
And also, from the Kavya perspective, then the soul of any text is, you said, the direct meaning as well as the rasa. Mm-hmm. So because Bhagavatam has the rasa, and then Vedanta Sutra will not naturally have it, so Bhagavatam always stands superior.
That's interesting.
Because both the rasa and the direct meaning always go together, according to Kavya. And that forms the soul of any literature. And the body is clarity, the three aspects, sweetness, clarity and vigor.
Mm.
The main qualities. There are ten, but
three are main.
So that forms the body. So even the Vedic literature, everything, these three should be there. But there's still the body, the soul is the direct meaning and the rasa which it brings up.
Mm. Okay.
So that's why Purana stands superior, because they bring out the rasa.
Rasa, okay. As opposed to the Upanishads, that just bring out the tattva aspect. That make any sense? Pretty far out. I mean, we've heard all this, but then it gets to the point where it starts to make sense.
Yeah, just organize anything you have, because otherwise it just pieces all over the place. And then to combine them, sometimes it's very difficult. But then we see Jiva Goswami combine them for us, and it is still, it's not easy, I mean, I have to admit.
No, but it just starts to make more and more.
Slowly,
because he's starting now, and then that will be referred. And now also, as he introduces these things, then everything after this will always include these elements.
Yeah, he doesn't give much details, but just made the point and then shows. Okay. Then he goes back to the Tatpurya Linga establishment.
Okay, that'll be the next one.
Yeah, but...
Oh, I mean just in general. In general, okay.
In general, yeah. This is the prominent.
Because it has theme, that here said that, okay. Prakarana, that's the next one. That's altering the syntax, or that's what we just did?
No, that's altering the syntax. Vakya means the third one, Maharaj. Altering the syntax. Prakarana means referring to the other text.
Prakarana, okay. Prakarana means adding further knowledge acquired elsewhere. This is found in the statement Srimad Bhagavatam 1.10.12. There are statements like, one should worship with the Darsha and Purnamasa sacrifices. Then there is the statement, a person desiring Swarga should worship with an Agnistoma sacrifice. This makes the goal of the sacrifices mentioned in the first instance clear. Yes, you're adding information, but like let's say in another place it you get a means, because you have the means, what's being done, the technical things, the activity itself, and the result. And here it says one should worship with the Darsha and Purnamasa sacrifice, but it doesn't say why. So then in another place, a person desiring Swarga should worship with an Agnistoma sacrifice. So it must be the Darsha and Purnamasa are part of the Agnishtoma whole thing. So then you know why it's done. So then that will give that extra, that meaning, and then it comes out and you get the actual understanding. Yeah. How are we doing? Time is... This one here, because I'm looking here, it's actually looks 1 minute back.
Yeah,
and for
back.
You, you're thinking it's 1 minute over. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai.